Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Good evening and welcome to Interchange. I'm your host this evening. My name is Allison Bektesh. Tonight I have here with me live in the studio, Tom Akuda, who is the director of the City of Bloomington's Planning Department, and District 1 City Council Member Chris Sturbaum. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for coming in and joining me this evening.
Good evening, Allison.
Our pleasure.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to find a single block of downtown Bloomington that hasn't recently been developed or has currently construction or is slated, you know, someone's eyeing it for a new business or a new development. And so I thought I'd bring you both in here to talk about that overall subject of development in downtown Bloomington, some of the regulations and discussions that go on behind the scenes that eventually lead to what we're all seeing downtown, which is this, recent massive growth of downtown Bloomington and development in that area. So you're the two to talk to. I'm going to just start off the program with some introductions, and we can talk about what you do and how you're involved. And I definitely want to get into discussing some of the current projects that are going on and what the vision for the future of Bloomington is. So that's how we're going to spend our next hour here on Interchange this evening. Tom, I'm hoping that you would start, being that there is a planning department at all. Apparently there are people who are sitting around and actually thinking about these things. This isn't something that just comes up each time someone wants to start a new business or build. There's a master plan, or people who are thinking long range about this within your department. I'm hoping you can explain to me kind of what that department does, what the roles are in that department and yours specifically.
Sure. The planning department is a department that has 13 professional planners, and we really cover three main functions. We do all of the land development review for the City of Bloomington. So our job is to coordinate any land development project that comes through our door, whether it's in the downtown or in outlying areas, and make sure it meets all of our code requirements and make sure it meets our expectations for being a high quality development project. That's the part of planning that we're most visible for. That's what we're on TV about, spending our long meetings with our planning commissioners and city council members. We also do all the transportation planning for the city to try to determine priorities for roads and sidewalks and bike paths and things like that. And we also do long-range planning. We're currently undergoing a process where we're updating our comprehensive plan called the Growth Policies Plan to paint a vision of what we want Bloomington to be like in year 2035, to try to create a roadmap for how we're going to adjust as our community continues to grow and change. So that's our main function. We do those three functions. And again, the land development function is the one that we're most known for because we're reviewing projects that are being built all over Bloomington.
All right, thank you. And Chris, Tom just mentioned the Planning Commission, but I have you here kind of to represent the political side of this, obviously, on City Council and the public, because that's who you're here from, and you do represent, your district does encompass downtown Bloomington from Walnut West. So I'm hoping you can also explain how you're involved in the planning process here in Bloomington.
Sure. Well, I like to think of myself as a big picture guy. And I've been around a long time, and my father was actually on the first plan commission. And that takes us back to the era when there was no planning in Bloomington. You know, citizens got together and they petitioned for the first growth policies plan. They got together and did a vision statement, and they said, we want something else to happen here. You know, what was happening was random acts of capitalism. It just, stuff was happening willy-nilly, and it was an era when some of the best parts of Bloomington were getting torn down. So, you know, people were moving to the suburbs, old houses, old buildings were getting torn down, no one valued the city, and old neighborhoods were getting filled with apartment buildings that were making people then want to move to the suburbs even more. So mm-hmm. People were sensing that something valuable was being lost. And they fought to get planning and zoning enabled here in the city of Bloomington and have some control over what happened. And it worked. I mean, it's a work in progress. But the interaction between developers and planners has really come about, brought about a good downtown. And we actually had a meeting where we brought together and did a downtown plan, brought an expert in from outside, and we got everybody at the table, the developers and the planners and the politicians and the citizens, and we talked about what we wanted our town to look like. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get everything we wanted, but we started introducing design reviews of one kind and another. And along with that, at the same time, the preservation movement mm-hmm. was getting strong and starting to save what was valuable about the old city. So for a while, it was just, don't tear this down, don't tear this down. And then we moved into a period where we said, we started seeing that we could build it back, and that's new urbanism. And it's like, now we understand what's happening in the city. And we're in a period, we went through this period of what I call a preservation period, where we said, something's valuable, save it. And then we got into this period of the new urban period, but also a period of valuing the urban form. And so we've been rebuilding the urban form, and what we want out of that is something, we want the stuff that gets rebuilt to make sense and to relate to one another and to be compatible and have some kind of cohesiveness and also longevity. We don't want garbage to be built that falls apart in a few years. So the desire to build is there. And when we guide, and when we got buy-in from people who wanted to develop, the rules became more or less the same for everyone. And everyone seems to benefit from a better product and a guiding. So this interaction of the free market and planning is, I think, a dynamic that has helped create the city that we have.
Do you have dates on that? When did we, that first plan kind of vision group
late
come
70s,
together? Late 70s.
Wasn't it, Tom?
We had a master plan that we did in the 70s, but the master plan I remember most is in 1991, and the 1991 master plan was a grassroots effort by people in the community who were really concerned about the fact that there was so much speculative development going on in Bloomington. So much of the community was being rezoned for development without there being any real indication that there was appropriate control and appropriate thought. And the 1991 Growth Policies Plan was, I think, sort of the watershed for comprehensive planning and improved development in Bloomington, and we've been able to build off of that since then. And I think had a better relationship overall between decision makers, planners, and the private sector, whereas those relationships were tremendously combative in the 1980s. The mm-hmm. 1980s, when you had the courthouse being talked about for demolition, when you had the south side of the square falling apart, when you had mall development pulling out from the urban core, those were the time, and rampant suburban development where credit was easy and projects were slapped together. Those were the real challenges that caused people to say, wait a minute, we want to make sure we don't lose our character. Let's paint a vision. And that's what the 1991 plan was really about.
Yeah, there were also big time winners and losers. Whenever someone put something in without mm-hmm. restrictions, somebody else lost. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was polarization and there was huge animosity. And so getting together on a plan and getting on the same page, it's amazing. People are friends now who would once were, you know, on complete other sides of the development issue.
Now the interesting thing, though, is you didn't really see the beginnings of the downtown development boom until about year 2000. So even though we started to put in the fundamentals of good planning and begin to control more the speculation type development, it did take people a little while to start focusing back inward, because you still had the suburban movement. I know that we were regularly approving student housing projects on the periphery of the community. They were coming out of the neighborhoods because the neighborhoods had had enough, but they were being done on the periphery of the community, and they were creating traffic problems that we were beginning to feel. So we began to get leadership from our mayoral administration and a cooperative effort from city council to start bringing people home and start bringing them into the downtown. And that really started to happen in the year 2000.
I'm glad you mentioned student housing. I can't wait to talk about that as we talk about some of the recent developments later in the show. I do want to get some of the terminology really defined before we get too deep into the discussion. You both mentioned zoning, so I'm hoping you can explain that a little more to me. What does it mean that a district can be zoned? Who gets to make that decision? Mm-hmm. Is that literally a piece of paper you got to check off that you matched everything? Can you have more than one zone at a time? If we can discuss that a little more.
I'll take a first crack at that. Any community that wants to regulate development has to have two building blocks. They have to have what's called a comprehensive plan, which is basically a guiding document that says what we want our community to be like, how we want it to grow, how do we want to deal with transportation and use of land. It's a very general document. That's the growth policies plan for us. Then you also have to have a zoning ordinance that creates what I call the rules of the road. That when you do come in for your development project, here are the rules that you have to follow to get a development approved. So we have a set of zoning regulations, a 300-page set of zoning regulations. Every piece of property has a zoning designation. Generally speaking, you have residential, commercial, industrial zones, but there's various permutations of those. So every property has zoning. And some people are happy with the zoning that they have, and other people want to rezone property to either fit a type of project they want to do, or they just don't think their zoning is appropriate. And that's when we talk about people trying to rezone their property. When somebody wants to rezone their property, they go to the City Plan Commission and seek the Plan Commission's input on whether it's a good zoning change or not. Chris is a representative who serves on the Plan Commission, and then it goes to the City Council because it's considered a legislative decision, and then it goes to City Council, where Chris, once again, with the City Council, gets to make the final decision on whether somebody gets a rezoning or not. So that's how the rezoning process works.
And if someone wanted to know on a real basic level about zoning, you know, I came out of the neighborhoods, and before there was zoning, anything could be built in the middle of a single-family neighborhood.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when it has a single-family zone, that was a kind of a down zoning, because now somebody couldn't just buy two pieces of property and put whatever they want on it and make a big profit, and, you know, at the expense of all that are around it. So the earlier one before the 90s, there were a couple of meetings that I describe as pitchfork and torch meetings, where people showed up and they were mad, you know, and they were developers and they were mad, and they were, you know, individual rights people, and they were mad. But in the end, you know, it was allowed us to protect the neighborhoods from being eroded and maybe even destroyed.
Yeah.
And you said it is building by building, or you can take a whole neighborhood, you know, this street through this street, and
is zoned in one way.
Okay.
So then, you know, like the downtown has a downtown zone. The neighborhood has a neighborhood zone with three unrelated can only live in that in those houses. And then there's some zones that allow apartments and 5 people and 10 people. I mean, there are different zones, and you try and make them make sense organically with, you know, the edge of the zone is always interacting with the edge of the other zone, and someone wants to use some of that zone for there, you know.
Yeah.
And you got to have rules, and you got to make decisions, and that's what the formal planning bodies are about.
And the most important thing is that the zones are meant to try to create a level of protection and a level of certainty for property owners. In the case of having residential zoning, people bought into these neighborhoods expecting a certain type of housing, expecting a certain type of form to the housing, anticipating a certain number of people living in the structures. And zoning is there to protect those people's rights and the reasons they moved into those neighborhoods. With the downtown, you have expectation of a completely different type of lifestyle. You expect to see first floor shopping. You expect to see multi-story buildings. You expect high density residential. You expect it to be hard to park. It's a different environment, and you create zoning to try to make sure new development has some consistency with what's already there.
So mm-hmm. What is the downtown zoned as, and when was that put into place?
We have a commercial downtown zoning district. We've always had a commercial downtown zoning district. The only change in the district is that it has expanded greatly. It used to be that the downtown zoning district was really over what I call the core of the downtown, which is kind of between the Sample Gates and Indiana Avenue, 7th Street to 3rd Street. In the old days, it was over to about Madison Street. Okay, a pretty small, compact area where we wanted to have higher density housing and multi-story development. But we've gradually increased that area over time. Now our downtown zone runs all the way to the railroad tracks on the north side of Walnut and College, where I used to stop around 10th Street. It goes west to Rogers Street. It goes south all the way south of 1st Street. And the reason we expanded it so much is we really discovered that we like downtown style development. We like a more urban community. And we want to see that kind of form replicated further out before we get into the neighborhoods as we get into those edges.
And we're growing, and we want to grow in a dense way, a compact way.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that then. There is a vision, you know, so you mentioned the typical urban kind of downtown things. You can shop on the first story. Mm-hmm. There's probably going to be taller buildings. You're going to have multiple people living in a much denser space. Mm-hmm. And you say, we want this. You know, is that just kind of when you go to planning school, you learn this is good? Or is this a political thing that a certain group of people want this? Who gets to make that decision? And I guess I am leading into the bigger idea of the growth policy plan here. What do we collectively want for that?
I guess I'll start and I'll let Chris pick up. There are a series of documents that establish our vision for what we want the downtown to be. First of all, our growth policies plan does say that we want our downtown to be high density, that we want to see first floor commercial space, that we want to see multi-story buildings. It lays out the basics, if you will. Then, as Chris mentioned, we did adopt a specific downtown vision plan in 2005. And that actually broke up the downtown into character areas and said, even within the downtown, each part of these character areas has a certain form to it, which means a certain type of building height, a certain type of design aesthetic, certain type of materials. And we got a lot more specific. We really drilled it down into the architectural form that goes not just in the downtown as a whole, but sections of the downtown. For instance, the courthouse looks much different architecturally than the area north of City Hall, for instance. It's a completely different architectural aesthetic. And that became the basis for the regulations that followed in terms of how tall you can make your building, in terms of whether you're going to have a storefront style construction with lots of glass out on the street, and some of the details that we discuss.
And mm-hmm. where does it come from? You know, this is what's fascinating to me is here on a local level, we just do what we do, you know, nose to the grindstone, problem, work on a problem, try to fix a problem. And then you look up and this has been happening all over the planet. You know, people are moving back into the cities. Mm-hmm. It's a national, international movement. And how does it happen? You know, the same thing happened with preservation. That was also happening in a national and an international way. Mm-hmm. But it happens on a local scale, you know, to a greater or lesser degree. Mm-hmm. And we're influenced by what's happening around us. So the old commercial buildings used to be, you know, one-story giant parking lot around it. Mm-hmm. You know, and now the commercial buildings is a mixed-use building. And the mixed-use building, surprise, looks like what they built 100-some years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
you know, commercial on the ground floor, residential above. And the downtown went through this interesting decline in density. You know, it was denser in the 40s and the 50s. And then it went through this decline. Everyone moved away. The numbers went down. Buildings got torn down for gas stations and parking lots. And I bet, I don't know the numbers now, but I bet we're approaching the old density because we're putting people back into the town and we're rebuilding that core for, you know, for the first, well, for the foreseeable future, this town is going to be here. And when we put things back, we want to rebuild the form in a way that, you know, is there for people in 100 years.
Wonderful. Well, in our next segment, we will talk about a lot of that rebuilding that's going on right now. We are going to take a quick break. I'll remind you or anyone who just tuned in, my name is Allison Bektish. I'm the host here on Interchange, and you're listening to guests Tom Makuda and Chris Sturbaum talking about planning in Bloomington. We'll be right back. I'm your host, Allison Bektish. I'm joined in the studio this evening with Tom Makuda and Chris Sturbaum, planning director of the City of Bloomington and member of Plan Commission and City Council, respectively. Again, thank you both for joining me. We spoke a little bit about what it means to even have that kind of master vision or the planning department and the planning commission at first, but I want to get right into this downtown development that we're actually seeing and talk about the strategies that are being implemented right now. We have this plan that's in process for what's going to happen in 2035, but there's buildings being, springing up like mushrooms right now. And so I want to talk about why we're doing that and what's gone into those. Most notably, as you mentioned earlier, student housing. I don't know, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would say that of the new buildings built within that kind of square mileage that you were giving me before between the south of the railroad, north of First Street, Rogers to Indiana, when you have a brand new building, there's students living in those now within, I would say, the last 10 years. Is that a trend that's happening in downtown Bloomington?
Without question. Previous to 2000, students were largely looking at what I call garden apartment projects, new garden apartments that were built in the suburbs. And then we actually started talking to developers about doing urban infill projects. As those developers would come to the planning department and say, do you have any property available to put 300 bedrooms of student housing, we would say, well, land is getting limited on the periphery. We're really trying to direct people to develop downtown. Here are some properties that you may want to look into that may be on the market. And what really happened is the combination of the planning staff, the mayor's office, and receptive boards and commissions started to steer the developers towards doing downtown housing. Because they were promised that they would be able to get higher density. They had a review process that was reasonable. They weren't having to rezone property. And what happened is success built on success. As some people were able to get their projects approved and you saw buildings in the ground, other developers would say, hey, this person got this down the block. Maybe I want to try a project like this too. And you began to see this momentum going. That's led to the pretty strong pace of development that we see now. Since the year 2000, we have approved almost 2,000 new bedrooms downtown, a little over 1,800, and we have about 600 more in the pipeline for about the next year and a half. Not all those people are students. We do have seniors, we do have young professionals, but the vast majority of the housing is for undergrads and graduate students.
I do want to talk about the options for those beyond students mm-hmm. as well. It's interesting that you mentioned that, but was there a moment then, like when the first big apartment building went up, that everyone kind of had to hold their breath for a minute? Are students going to move all the way downtown? Does this seem too far away from campus? Because you say now it's profitable enough that other people are following suit, but was that first one kind of built on the hopes or a whim and it worked? Or was there a moment there where it's like, I don't know if this is going to come through?
That's the developer's worry. See, our side is build good building, mm-hmm. you know, so it worked. And I was going to add that one of the reasons that this is an international movement is there's a sustainability component to living close in. There's a sustainability component to being able to use alternate transportation and not drive miles and miles between one location and another location. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, in this form, the students are the ones who are willing to move into that form at this time. But they aren't all going to be students, and they aren't all students now. Right. And there are people who want to, there's some retirement places that are coming on online, and there are some condos already that people are moving in, and there's a demand as it becomes, you know, as it becomes a more successful downtown. It's actually a very good place for people to retire if they can, you know, get in a nice place, go down and get a cup of coffee. They don't have to drive anymore. You know, they can get around and walk and enjoy the community. So the student apartments are kind of a phase of building the downtown back. Then they're inhabiting the downtown. They're sustaining the businesses in the downtown to some extent. But I don't see it as always being a student enclave. It's just a phase of rebuilding the urban core.
And those properties that will benefit elderly or even young professionals who want to live and work downtown and right. you know, help with the environment in that way, would they be able to move into those same buildings that students are living in? Do we have any buildings where it could be students on you know, and right next door to a family in the same apartment right. building, well, like in a lot of big cities? Yeah. Or do you kind of segment them still? This is clearly just going to be a student building. Later we'll build something for elderly.
If I could, you know, one of the concepts of new urbanism is that there haven't been aging buildings coming online because no one was building them for a long time. So what we've got in town are buildings that haven't aged out. But as they age and as they overbuild student apartments, some of these are going to start aging out and they're going to be more affordable for other people other than students. And that's why it's so important to build them sustainably and in a way that make them last through time. You know, because the buildings we saved in the downtown are 100 years old, and we want the kind of buildings that fill in the form to be there for that long. So, you know, it's sort of like who will inhabit the hive after a while? It won't always be the same bees, you know.
I think the vast majority of the new buildings built downtown have the ability to have multiple demographics living in them. I might make an exception, say, for Smallwood Plaza, where probably your percentage of non-students is low, but I think the vast majority of projects are of a scale and of a quality where you could expect to see a mixed demographic. Give you a couple of examples. Bicycle Apartments, which was the original downtown development built in 1995 by CFC off of Madison Street, around 4th and Madison Street, is an affordable downtown housing project that is probably has an extremely small percentage of students. Yet because we didn't require parking for that project in a very high density, they were able to make that work for a low income demographic. Through the course of probably about the last 10 years, I've had three planners in my office who've lived downtown. Two of them had lived in Madison Park condos, right off Madison Street around the near Prospect Hill neighborhood, just on the west side of downtown. And I had one planner live on top of the Allen building on top of the Uptown. So there are opportunities for non-students to live in Bloomington and have very quality lifestyle. And as Chris said, there's no question this is the trend going forward, as people are going to want a less complicated lifestyle, not having to rely on automobile transportation.
I was going to say, We could talk about this new showers area. That's an interesting discussion, you know. And what's interesting about the downtown is also the surrounding neighborhoods that are very close, the old traditional neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And those were built up during the old showers factory era. So they surrounded what was the center of commerce and energy and money making in the town. And then that went away. So there was this kind of hole, and there's all this stuff around the town. So, you know, even though there may not be places to live in the downtown, there are still urban, suburban neighborhoods, old suburban neighborhoods surrounding the downtown.
And the showers common for our listeners, talking about trying for a tech park, kind of filling in those buildings, those old brick buildings, kind of by the recycling center up there is what you're discussing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Filling it in with, I mean, and those are jobs that I would expect lots of young young new workers to get into if it's all filled with new IT companies, startup companies, people working in that industry that's growing so fast. Mm-hmm. And so you would want those people to be able to find a place to live downtown where they don't have to have multiple roommates or aren't allowed to, you know, own a dog or start a family.
And the city bought those 12 acres and has some plans to redraw some of the streets and lay out a new framework for all that development, which hopefully a lot of it is mixed use.
That's correct. We're probably about 4 to 5 months from finishing a master plan for the 12 acres we acquired. And a part of that development will be housing. And specifically, we will be excluding student housing by most likely deed restriction. So you'll be able to have an opportunity for companies to have small businesses there with potentially housing opportunities for their employees. And that's something we really look forward to. To try to bring an employment hub to recreate the old hub from the Showers family and also have a living opportunity that will be somewhat unique to Bloomington.
So 100 years ago, that was the biggest furniture factory in the world. Mm-hmm. And the Showers people were developing those neighborhoods around it. They were buying the property, subdividing the property, you know, loaning their workers money to build those little houses. So all that stuff that surrounds is ready for the rebirth of this Showers era as a tech park.
You brought up the bicycle apartments, which do offer affordable housing. Mm-hmm. What can the city do to make sure that affordable housing is available in a new development? And I mean, a company, I would think, or retailers, they don't really have need for anyone who is low income to be anywhere close because of, you know, they want the people who are high income. So I would think there's kind of a push and pull between developers where, you know, the retailers want people who have extra money to spend. And then for, you know, just equal rights, most of us would want to be able to find people who don't have minimum wage that they could still live close enough that they can walk downtown. They can go to the grocery store without running into a car or anything like that.
Not to mention the retailers need workers.
Yeah. It's a very, very complicated package to put together affordable housing, particularly in the downtown where the price of land is highest. I really look at this as a multiple part approach. One is you have to have housing density that's extremely high, so developers can be able to get the number of units and bedrooms that they want. Most people do not know this, but the density of the bicycle apartments is far higher than Smallwood Plaza. Okay, for an example of why high density can work for affordable housing, yet it's not too tall, it's not out of scale. The other is you have to actually provide financial incentives, where the tax abatements, for instance, have been done for affordable housing projects, and they should continue to be considered for future affordable housing projects. We have city home funds, administered through our housing department, housing and neighborhood development department, that also can be a subsidy. There has to be a financial side and there has to be a zoning side, and you have to have both pieces, I think, in order for these projects to be successful.
Mm-hmm. What other tax abatements are available for downtown developers?
Typically what you'll see in the granting of abatements, we don't grant as many abatements as we used to, but you'll typically see abatements granted for quality historic renovations. You will see abatements granted for affordable housing. And if you asked a question earlier, Allison, about when we sort of knew that people were taking the first baby steps, I can distinctly remember it. It was in the year 2000. I was working with a developer who was developing a vacant lot next to the Bluebird. Okay, it was a vacant gravel lot. Okay, it is now a three-story building with brick and stone, one of the first buildings, downtown buildings built in Bloomington in that era. It's had various restaurants over time, but it's always had the residential. And the developer was scared to death that they would be able to get a tax abatement to renovate that forgotten piece of property. They got the abatement. They got the zoning approval. They were right next to a parking garage, so they didn't have to provide parking. And now they have a successful three-story building that they consistently rent. And, you know, that's an example of the kind of package that you need to have in place sometimes to make a developer be able to feel like they can go forward.
And we'll talk about this. We'll finish out our segment with our look into the future. Mm-hmm. But tax abatements, are there other ways? I mean, there is a vision for what would make the ideal downtown. Mm-hmm. Are there other ways besides tax abatements that your department or your commission is able to make that happen?
Well, I mean, the one thing I'll say is that it's not just housing that drives the quality of downtown. It's public investment. The public investment in the Beeline Trail, as the mayor puts it, is the biggest economic development project in Bloomington. And the Beeline Trail has stimulated tremendous investment. Blooming Foods, Beeline Trail. Hyatt Hotel, approved very recently at Plan Commission and Council, will be built soon based on the Beeline Trail. Kroger, down in Seminary Square, will do an addition and renovate based on the synergy with the Beeline Trail. So infrastructure, whether it be trail infrastructure, utility infrastructure, streetscaping, all these investments matter and create a climate where people feel like they want to invest because they know the city's investing.
And we've been ramping up since the 80s, really, when planning started. Mm-hmm. You know, the then mayor, Tommy Allison, wanted to plant trees, mm-hmm. you know, because the downtown looked bad. And, mm-hmm. you know, then we went, then Fernandez had the idea of the market.
And, yes, and really farmer's market.
And mm-hmm. the seed ideas of the Beeline Trail were coming out mm-hmm. between the Allison and the Fernandez administration. Mm-hmm. So people just kept the ball going and kept, you know, they saw part of it and then they saw part of it. And then, you know, then they decided they had to redo the drainage under the streets, which is the most boring part of doing infrastructure. You have to tear everything apart. But then we had some good plans on how to put the street back together in a better way,
right.
as long as we're going to dig the street up and inconvenience everyone. So then, you know, we were also ready when funds were coming from the federal government. We had things drawn. We had things so-called mm-hmm. shovel ready. And they said, anybody want this money? And we said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it, you know. So we were ready and we planned for it. And that, and we got some help with the Beeline also in a similar way mm-hmm. from the state government, didn't we really, Tom?
Yeah. Also, the other thing I'd note is it's just not public investment and private investment. It's civic investment. Fairview School deciding to stay and not to relocate.
Yeah, that was a big discussion.
A very big discussion. The post office, you know, vacating 4th Street, but still staying on the periphery of the downtown as opposed to going on the suburbs. The library mm-hmm. Rebuilding and expanding. Churches yeah. staying downtown.
Yeah, there's an alternate Bloomington that Tom mm-hmm. and I can think about mm-hmm. had these arguments been lost. You know, and they were losable, mm-hmm. each one of them at the time.
Yeah.
Should we keep the courthouse was the first one.
Yeah.
That was
mm-hmm.
really close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we've kind of won a lot of close ones over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll talk about what people see for that 2035 date as we mm-hmm. Come back out of the break. You are listening to Interchange. I'm your host, Allison Bektesh. You're listening to Tom Akuta and Chris Durbaum talk about development in downtown Bloomington. We'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
And you're listening to Interchange on WFHB. Support for WFHB comes from X Printwear and Promotions, specializing in corporate apparel, athletic wear, promotional products, business cards, and letterhead. X Printwear is located on Bloomington's west side. More information available at xprintwear.com.
We are back. You're listening to Interchange on WFHB. I'm your host tonight, Allison Bektesh, here in the WFHB studios. Tom Makuta and Chris Durbaum talking about downtown planning. We're going to go into that end date, 2035, that we're hoping the growth policy plan has a beautiful vision for and how to get there from here. A couple questions before we jump into that. The thing about planning a city, especially Bloomington, but I think probably all city planners have this issue, is that there's no such thing as a blank kind of like Sim City city left. You know, you always are planning off of something that's already there. So how much do you have to take that into consideration, or what kind of things are you doing? Because obviously if you could start from scratch, you would know exactly, well, streets should run this way and this way, and we should make sure that the, you know, the market is right next to the bowling alley or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, you get to play that game. But what do you have to take into consideration since you're not starting from scratch?
Well, there are very few circumstances where you can have a blank slate. If you have a very, very large development, typically out in the periphery, you have almost a blank slate. But even then, you typically have to consider the surrounding context. The 12 acres north of City Hall is a little bit of a blank slate in that you have a lot of land to plan for, but you have historic buildings. So you never get the proverbial blank slate. Every decision that we make is based on a couple of factors. One is, how does a new development fit or not fit with its surrounding structures and surrounding built environment? You have to do that. That's the essence of good planning and building a good town. So you have to take that into account. You also have to take into account past decisions, the things you've done in other projects, what's worked, what's not worked, and then learn as you go. So those are the things that I try to keep in mind as we put pieces of the puzzle together, is how does a project fit with this environment? How is it compatible with some of the past decisions we've made? And then looking back on mistakes and saying, okay, what did we learn? So those are the kinds of things I think about as I try to plan new projects.
There's also an organic element to the way a town grows, you know, and there are towns that are thousands of years old. Mm-hmm. And there are some of the interesting towns are the brand new urban towns, and some,
yep,
sometimes they make big mistakes because they don't have the organic development. And sometimes, you know, a big building, we try and make buildings look more interesting because there's something innately interesting about things that have grown over time, you know, that you, it's hard to even imitate. So we sometimes make them vary their building a little bit so that it has some of the elements of the, you know, development over time that people find pleasing and organically interesting. So there's an element to, that's just the natural way cities grow, but with guiding how it grows, I'd rather not start from scratch, you know, then you don't have, yeah, a real city.
Mm-hmm. And then Tom mentioned the Hyatt that was just recently up for discussion as part of city council meetings, and of course steps before that, and it was controversial for multiple reasons. There's some public land involved in that development that was acquiesced. There's some just history of that company, the companies that are coming in, the Hyatt, both the Hyatt and the managing the company that will run the hiring and the employment, and you know these things. You know some of the complaints against these companies, and you know that they're coming in on public land. However, I assume they went through all their proper steps and did what they needed to do. Is there a time, is that all someone needs to do? Is, I have this property and here's my vision for it. As long as I fill out all the paperwork, it's mine? Or is there a time that the council or the commission or the department can kind of put their foot down and say, this isn't the right thing for Bloomington, or you haven't shown that you're a good addition to our downtown?
Well, we have guidelines on the plan commission, and they get waivers for, we can give them a little more height than, you know, instead of just saying, oh, sorry, you're a foot too tall, you're out, you know. So there are a number of waivers, and we gave them a number of waivers because there's an underlying social value to putting a hotel near the convention center. So, you know, there's sort of an understanding in a background that there's a public good, so we can make exceptions. And in my perfect world, that would have been smaller, you know, but it might not have been viable. So we do the best we can.
Well, and I think one of the things about my job that's probably most misunderstood is there's almost no project that comes through our office that doesn't get modified. Chris knows this, being on the Plan Commission, because he's involved in some of the discussions behind the scenes as projects evolve. But what happens is people very rarely come in and they unroll their plans, and I say, that's fantastic, don't change a thing. The only one I can really honestly remember was when Jim Murphy of CFC unrolled the Kirkwood building over on Madison and Kirkwood, and I thought, man, he just got that almost perfectly right.
We argued about height on that.
And we argued a little bit, but it was so close to being what I wanted to see. But there are rules, and you have to follow the rules. We do have an allowance for deviations, as Chris said, for height or density or the amount of commercial space. And we try to make our decisions based on whether the project, you know, has merit in terms of providing a good overall design for the community. Does it provide a public benefit? Is it compatible and consistent with other structures around it? So there's some flexibility, but we do have standards. So you have a set of standards where you come in and you match your project, and if you deviate, then we have to evaluate whether the deviation is really good for the community or not.
You mentioned CFC a couple times during this hour. Of course, a huge developer throughout Bloomington and downtown. Showers Plaza, the mall here, Fountain Square Mall, sorry. And these properties that you've mentioned. I guess I'm also curious, is every plot, you know, like every block in downtown Bloomington, is that privately owned by someone and then the building is rented out? Or does the city of Bloomington own any of that land? Could there be just a deal between two, like you said, back in the days where it was like the capitalism is just what's at the heart of this. So I own this, you know, the corner that the bakehouse is on, and I actually want to sell it to someone else who's going to make it something else, and the city can't tell me what to do.
Zoning does not regulate changes of ownership. So if I'm a private investor and I have the bakehouse property, lucky me, and I want to sell the property to you, you can take that property and take that investment and run with it. But if you want to tear the building down, or if you want to build an addition on your building, those activities do require zoning approval. So zoning regulates the built environment and the construction of buildings or additions to buildings. It doesn't regulate the sale of property between two people.
And there are preservation rules, too, about not demolishing a project. You know, there's a demolition delay, so any of these historic buildings have to have a three-month waiting period while we have an opportunity to designate them and protect them.
Yeah. And does the public weigh in during that period as well?
They could.
So are all the buildings, let's just take the downtown square, are those all privately owned buildings?
I believe they are, with the exception of you have the Waldron owned by Ivy Tech comes to mind, but most everything on the square, I believe, is privately held.
All right. Thank you for clearing that up. Oh, one other thing about the Hyatt that I wanted to know.
Yep.
So you mentioned its proximity to the convention center, and I know that's a big talk that we actually just need a new convention center, that it's not bringing, we're not able to bring in the conventions that we want because there's not enough space. You can't even have another council member, Steve Volan, said he can't even have his chess tournament in the convention center because there's not enough space. So How much do you take that in consideration? Why build this hotel downtown if we actually know, honestly, we just need a new convention center, which might not be there?
Well, I think there are plans to enlarge that convention center, and we're maybe a year or 2 years away, would you say, Tom?
Yes.
And the economy's falling on its face slowed everything down on that count, but you know, we know that's going to come, and it's such a good thing for middle of the week hotels filling up and middle of the week people shopping downtown and working downtown. So we do want to keep bringing the conventions into Bloomington. The more we nurture this downtown, the more it's an attractor for people who want to have conventions. So good.
Yeah, I think the Hyatt will enhance the convention center opportunity because of the scale of events you might be able to have. The Hyatt may affect the hotel component. There will be a hotel component. Certainly, the ideal scenario would be what we call a full service hotel with a lot of rooms. It's possible that as they look at the feasibility, they might drop the room count or they might go to more of a limited service product. But it will not affect, in my view, convention center's ideas to become bigger so they can capture more events. I think that will only enhance the convention center.
Do you know if anything besides a hotel was considered for that property? Could it have been downtown housing for young professionals or families in Bloomington?
I know that originally in discussions with the property owner, they had some ideas for retail space with more what I call conventional residential above. I don't know what kind of demographic they were trying to hit.
And there's no commercial space as part of that new hotel that's being built?
No standalone space. Obviously, from my perspective, the hotel is a commercial driver, both in and of itself, as well as helping surrounding businesses.
The land became too valuable with all the improvements around it.
Mm-hmm. Right, and including the Beeline, which I was so excited you talked about before. Of course, that's a huge downtown development that's helped a lot, though also the hotel is not actually accessible directly from the Beeline. You walk around to the front the way the plan is.
Mm-hmm. You will have... If you're a guest, you'll have keyed entry off the Beeline.
Oh.
If you're a hotel resident, if you're a hotel resident, you would be able to get in at various places off the Beeline. If you're not staying at the hotel, you'll have to walk around to the lobby.
I wanted a shop that accessed the Beeline,
right.
And I didn't
mm-hmm.
get it. But.
And so did I. I just couldn't figure out a way to make it happen. Mm-hmm.
And earlier off mic, we were talking about actually, it seems like that hotel, I don't know anything about planning. Well, that's why I had you on the show. But it is at least taking up parking space. And you told me the percentage of downtown that you wouldn't think that is just right now a parking lot that could be used. Can you talk a little bit more about the data you found?
It's really amazing. And both the Preservation Commission and the Planning Department sort of discovered this through our research. And over 50% of the downtown on privately held land is surface parking. And clearly, as you look at more mature urban areas and bigger urban areas, those sort of percentages just don't exist. The land is put to better use. So we have a lot of opportunities to add to our built environment and make it more aesthetically pleasing and make it more pedestrian friendly. There's nothing worse as a pedestrian than walking by a dead surface parking lot. So we're looking forward to filling those lots in with structured parking and housing and the things that make a community more urban and more pleasant.
Also, one thing that you mentioned before is these students who have moved into these new apartments contributing to the economy. And I think that is a big idea behind urbanism, is that the people are, if it's mixed use, if the people are living there and shopping there and going out there, then it's good for everyone. It's safer, that the people are there 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any numbers on, since downtown has become more dense, has that boost the economy and specifically the local businesses, not the Chipotle or the McDonald's that used to be on Kirkwood, not the chain restaurants, but is that helping the local community, or are these students shopping at those chain restaurants that they know about from wherever they actually live?
It turns out they're shopping at both. There is an identity that students coming from out of town have with chains based on their experiences where they live. So, what Downtown Bloomington Inc. and other people have always told me is that the chains may bring people to the downtown and they may go to a chain first when they come to campus, but it's the local businesses that frankly keep them downtown and shopping downtown. And the blend and the percentages are really pretty good. We have a nice blend of local and non-local restaurants and shopping opportunities. And our goal all along is to keep it balanced. And I think so far we have that. We haven't tilted too far on the national chain side. And right now I think that residents have an opportunity to have both experiences.
My questions just keep coming, and I know we're pushing up right on 7 o'clock. Those mixed-use buildings that we have had downtown that do have first-floor commercial, how are those businesses doing? Are they being shopped at by the people who live in those buildings? Are people making it up past Sixth Street to go shop at some of those little boutiques and coffee shops up there?
I think we've been very successful, and the thing that's different, as Chris mentioned, was the economic downturn in 2008 and 2009. That would have wrecked a lot of communities. But I think the fact that Bloomington had a certain amount of resiliency based on Indy University, and also because we were growing the downtown and we were putting customers into downtown, there was less business loss and more business growth than you would imagine in a, frankly, about a 3 or 4 year really bad economy. So the Downtown Bloomington Inc. keeps track of those statistics, okay. Business losses and business additions, and the additions were always higher than the losses.
Okay, so then with our last 3 minutes, let's talk about the growth policy plan, which obviously could be its whole own interchange. Who's writing that? Who gets to give their input? How will it become adopted? Is it a suggestion, or is that going to become an ordinance, a law? This is where we have to go as Bloomington.
Well, they've taken a lot of input already, so they have a vision statement. And once we go from the vision statement, then we start fleshing it out into real regulations, mm-hmm. you know. And I wouldn't want to get out of here without talking about the vision of the future. And I really see the direction in how we use our streets, how we use our bicycles, how we, you know, connect for pedestrians more, how we have a better transit system. You know, all of that is significantly going to come into play in the future of this downtown, wouldn't you say, Tom?
Yeah, I think we're going to become, as dynamic as we are, we're going to become an older community. We are going to have an aging population. We're going to have a population that, despite the fact that we're growing older, is going to want to be more active, which means we have a real burden on us to create a great mix of housing and a very, very walkable, bikeable environment downtown. And I think that those are the things that I try to focus on is to take downtown to the next level, where we don't have barren streets and barren sidewalks, and those areas of downtown are very walkable and very interesting.
So Tom's planning his retirement, but this is also what young people want.
Yeah.
What young
mm-hmm.
people want out of the community. So it's going to mm-hmm. be a good deal for everybody, I think.
Well, we're out of time, and of course, that's just the beginning of the next discussion. So I appreciate you so much for coming on, and I'll have you back as that policy comes into play more and more. Again, you're listening to Interchange on WFHB. My guest today, Tom Akuta, who is the director of the City of Bloomington Planning Department, and Councilmember Chris Sturbaum, District 1, and also on the Plan Commission, talking about some of that history and current development and some views for the future. Thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.